Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Welcome back to SavvyDentist.com and to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. My name's Jesse Green, and it is fantastic to have your company for another episode of the show. Now, if you're a dental practice owner and you're thinking about tax at this time of year, well, frankly, you're not alone, because it is that time of year where we start thinking about tax, at least here in Australia, as the financial year draws to a close. Now, in this conversation today, I'm going to be joined by Brendan Campbell, who's one of the directors at Prosperity Advisors, and he's going to be sharing some specific strategies and some tactics and some insights that will help you get your tax affairs in order so you can stay on the right side of the compliance line but also maximize the benefit of having a business. Now, as always, it's important to understand that this is a general conversation. It's not meant as specific advice tailored to your circumstances or situation. You will need to go and speak to your accountants and financial advisors and all those other people to make sure that this information is useful for your circumstances. So please don't do anything silly. Go and consult your qualified specialist and take that advice to them and get your affairs sorted out personally there. Now, in this conversation, we do talk a lot about the different strategies and tactics. So you're going to want to have a pen and paper handy. We're going to be talking about fringe benefits tax. We're going to be talking about EVs. We're going to be talking about professional profits allocations and a whole lot more. So please, as I said, do have a pen and paper handy, because you want to take some notes and take that to your accountant. Now, if you're a motivated and driven practice owner and you want to continue to grow your practice, which when you hear Brendan's conversation today, you're going to want to continue to grow your practice, then I really encourage you to come and join both Brendan and I at the Dental Growth Summit. He and I have been invited to be panelists along with about 12 other people, and there's going to be four sessions across 4 nights beginning from May the 1st. So it goes from May 1 through to May 4. And there's a group of people talking about all the things you need to have in place to not just survive any economic upheaval, but indeed thrive. Lots of different topics. We're going to be talking about marketing. We're going to be talking about wealth and finance. We're going to be talking about recruiting A players and retaining team members and everything in between. It's a totally free event. It's no charge, no obligation. And all you need to do is to register for the call and come along on each of those nights. Lots of great stuff. And we can't wait to see you there. We think this is going to give you the tools and the knowledge to take your practice to the next level. So look forward to seeing you there for that as well. But for now, let's get on to our conversation with Brendan. As always, have a pen and paper handy, and we'll see you very soon. Hey, Brendan, thanks so much for taking the time to come and join us on the Savvy Dentist Podcast. How's things up in Brisbane?
Brisbane, beautiful one day, perfect the next. Thanks for having me on, Jesse. First-time caller, long-time listener, so really happy to be on the podcast.
Mate, I appreciate that. And, mate, you've been, you know, really well-known in dental circles and business circles in general for ages with, you know, the company you're part of, Prosperity. And I know it's a busy time of year for you guys in the accounting financial advice space. Tell me why this time of year, what's happening in your world?
Deadlines are our big thing. So I guess, you know, most businesses, as you say, we're Prosperity Advisors, big in the medical space, health space, whether it be dentists, doctors, specialists. That's my bag. That's what I do, a lot of that. No one's ready to go to tax on 1 July. No one's really ready 1 September. We do a couple of masses. We do a bit of things. Some people get it in. But like most people, it starts coming in after Christmas sometime. By the end of January, I'm getting things thrown at me left, right and centre saying I've got deadlines in. It's like the ATO deadline at the end of March and then the next one in mid-May. So things get busy. We'll throw in FBT in the middle of that. And yeah, it's just a crazy time of year. But it's also that time of year where you've got to do the tax planning as well and lots of consideration. So we're wrapping up old stuff. We're getting tax planning out and budgets around the corner. All things happening. It's a good time of year.
It is a good time of year. It is a good time of year. It's really interesting. You know, before I owned a business, I never used to kind of get excited about tax. But now, honestly, this is going to sound really, you know, counterintuitive. I love these conversations because there's a lot of strategy, there's a lot of thinking, and I know that you guys do a lot of that strategic analysis to best position your clients. And it's a bit like a game of chess of moving the pieces around to get it all right. So let's talk about tax planning for dental practices. Lots of things to talk about, of course, and you're the expert of all things tax and related to that. So what's hot, what's not this year?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, there's usual tax planning stuff you go through, but just think from a dental point of view or from a practice owner point of view really is where we're focused.
Yep.
The big one, I got to mention it, and apologies to anyone who is at your your event at the Gold Coast in February and they met me. They probably heard me raving about EVs. I'm big on this stuff at the moment. There are some huge tax benefits on EVs. So if apologies if I've already bored your ear on this, but anyone who hasn't, EVs are the go. So if you get an electric vehicle, and this came in December, it sort of got royal assent. So it's all live. It's live from 1 July, technically, 1 July 2022.
Yep.
So the current state of play, if you're a business and you provide an electric vehicle to an employee, mm-hmm. which, big tip, can be yourself,
yep.
you provide it as a business to an employee, that is a tax deductible expense to you. The purchase of the vehicle, the finance on the vehicle, the registration, the insurance, probably no fuel on an EV, but there's plug-in hybrids fall into this as well.
Yep.
There's a couple of caveats. So that is a tax deduction. Now, what normally is the problem is if you claim that as a tax deduction through your business, you pay fringe benefits tax on it.
Right.
FBT has been around for ages. This rule is not so much about giving you a tax deduction. It's about exempting it from FBT. So the big bit. If it is an EV that's under 85,000 or 84,916 is the exact number. If it's under $84,916 drive away, including GST, full kit and caboodle, under that number, it's provided to an employee. It is a tax deduction with no FBT. And it's an EV or a plug-in hybrid.
Yep.
It's a tax deduction with no FBT to pay. So Tesla Model Y, 76 grand, whatever that is, somewhere there.
Yep.
You buy that for someone in your practice, might be you, or an associate of you, might be your partner, who doesn't even work in the practice. You buy it for them, but it's provided to you as an employee.
Yes.
Tax deduction for the business. I mean, at the moment, you actually under temporary full expensing, you write the whole thing off in the current year. You're still tax deductions are limited to the 64,000 luxury car tax limits, but it's a $65,000 tax deduction this year.
So instead of depreciating, you just get to claim it basically.
For the moment, I'll touch on that later as well because that's actually dialing off. But at the moment, you'd claim it all in this year. But assuming it's a bit too late to probably get it by 30 June anyway, if it's after that, even if you're depreciating it 25% over the next few years, $60,000 tax deductions, 25% of that, plus the insurance, plus the rego, plus the interest on it because you borrowed within the business and left the money in your offset, like, it's just a huge tax deduction. Essentially, over a period of time, $70,000 vehicles, really costing you 25, 30 grand.
Does that include, sorry, just on this, I'm probably getting into the minutiae a little bit, but
Love that detail. That's all right.
Okay. Does that include getting, the specific power plugs for the home kit and all the rest of it? Like, I don't have an EV, so hands up, I'm still a bit of an eco vandal with my petrol car at the moment. We'll change that in due course. But does that include any like Tesla batteries for the house or anything of that nature?
Not Tesla batteries, definitely not. So the EV charging station, it's a fantastic question. I love that your brain's gone straight to something like that because you do have to put in, a charger at home. Typically, you don't have to, but if you plug in the wall, it takes you, 24 hours to fully charge this thing. If you're putting in sort of a 7-amp charge, you're charging it in 6-7 hours, basically an overnight plug-in once a week,
yep.
and you're charged up, which is fantastic. There is a draft ruling out because, the legislation's come out and they've said this, but now they've got to catch up with these little nuances to get it right. So there is some draft ruling out about claiming on a percentage or, a rate per charge at 4 or 6 cents. Don't quote me on the exact amount, but when you charge, yes, there's a small amount you can claim. So you keep a bit of a track of your kilometres and your charging and those sort of things, and there will be some benefit there. But no, it's not there's not an immediate deduction for the cost of the install of those devices.
Okay.
But to give you a guide, you can get one installed for about $2,000.
Okay, so not big dollars.
No, particularly when you're getting a massive deduction for this EV.
Exactly right. Hey, listen, mate, I'm happy to try and get all the things we can within the rule. So if there's a rule that says I can do it, let's do it.
100%, yeah.
Okay, so that's a big one. So EVs, Elon Musk is going to be happy. He's going to be smiling with that ruling. And, of course, it's not just Tesla that's got EVs out these days. There's lots of EVs on the market, I'm noticing.
There is. There's a heap. In fact, the biggest issue I have, and as I mentioned, I deal with a lot of doctors, a lot of dentists. My biggest issue I have is I'll talk about this and everyone gets excited and everyone gets into it and I'm really into it. And then the first question is normally not about can I put a charging station at home. It's, under 85,000, there's a wiggle room and it's like, no, it is under 84,916 and that is it. If it's a $90,000 EV, you're out. It doesn't work at all. So it's a hard cutoff.
So no fractional benefits beyond that?
No, none of that. It's a hard cutoff. FBT applies or it doesn't apply, and it doesn't apply when under that. So you're right. There's a lot of EVs out there, but, you know, some of the bigger ones, the Mercedes, the whatever else, there, even the Tesla Model X, It's $170,000. Tesla Model Y is only 76 or something like that. The Tesla Model 3, I think, is about the 80. It's sort of just getting under. Not if you go the dual motor, you'd have to go the single motor. So you've sort of got to think about it. But there's a lot of other ones out there. And whether the dentists are happy with those or not will depend on your personal preference, right? But you've got, I don't know, the BYDs, the MGs, the Nissan Leafs. In fact, the one I like, I actually think this is a really good one, and I swear I'm spruiking it so much, but there's a Mitsubishi Outlander 7-seater plug-in hybrid that you can get just under. It's about 78.
Okay.
It's a plug-in hybrid. So that also counts in this legislation. I should point out the plug-in hybrids drop off in April 2025, and then it's only EVs after that. But for the moment, plug-in hybrids are included. And obviously, if you have one before that date, it's included. But if you buy one after that date, it's not included. But timing is important, because if you try to buy it now, if it's an 18-month wait, well, you're kind of getting close to that cutoff.
Yeah.
You don't want to take delivery after. You have to take delivery before. But, you know, a 7-seat plug-in hybrid Mitsubishi Outlander, it's sort of, you know, for those who want the bigger car, because you can't really, a 5-seat EVs, you just cannot get one that's 7-seat under that 85,000.
Yeah, wow.
It's only 5-seaters and they're all a little bit smaller. So family, business, you got to juggle these things up as to what you actually need. But if you're looking at a new car, EVs definitely should be on your list to consider. And from a good point of view, right?
They're 100%. Good. Look, I think, you know, we have discussions in our house pretty regularly. Our next car is definitely going to be an EV. I think the days of the petrol motor are rapidly waning.
They certainly are. And hopefully that's going to be under 85,000, Jesse. That's the key.
That's the key, mate. And I've made a note of 84916 underlined in bold type. Alrighty, mate. So what else is news in the tax world?
One thing I mentioned in there, so you get the temporary full expensing. It's a term I'll use, and apologies, it's probably not something you're thinking, what the hell is that?
Yeah, it probably needs a little bit of explanation, doesn't it?
It does a little bit. So at the moment, if you buy an asset for your business, including the EV, whatever it is, new chair, x-ray machines, whatever, asset of some sort, but leading into COVID and then COVID, we had this thing called, it was an instant asset write-off. Now it's called temporary full expensing. They just changed the names. But essentially, you get to claim a tax deduction of an asset you purchase in the year that you buy it, which is pretty big. So if you buy a large asset, $150,000 chair, install it, that's a tax deduction straight away in this year. That can be really beneficial, because the typical arrangement is through depreciation.
Yes.
So depending on the useful life of the asset or the estimated life of the asset, say it's a 10-year asset, you know, you'd claim it over a 10-year period. Accelerated depreciation works a bit differently, but, well, works a bit strangely in that a 10-year asset would be 20% is the rate you'd use. It's sort of 200% of dividing. I won't go into that detail, but say you buy an asset that lasts 10 years, it's 150 grand, you get to claim 20% of it in the first year, then 20% of the written down value the next year, 20% the next year, et cetera, et cetera. So you claim those assets over a period of life of the vehicle, which is sort of designed to be what you're using it for, because you're buying that asset not as a consumable, as a one-off cost. Mm. It's meant to last 10 years, so let's claim it over 10 years. That's the way the ATO would treat it. But at the moment, temporary full expensing, you claim the whole thing now. It's kind of huge discount, because your cash has gone out, you get the deduction right now.
Yeah.
But that is ending 30 June 2023. Asset has to be installed, ready for use, taken possession of, whatever you want to call it. It is after that date, it goes back to the old rules, which we haven't seen for a few years. So it's sort of just something to keep in mind. So if you've got a large asset purchase coming up and you kind of want a deduction this year, you're kind of going to have to make that decision pretty quickly and take possession of it before 30 June.
You're going to have to get your skates on, right?
Absolutely. And it may not be possible. And look, the bad side is people probably sometimes have that misconception that, oh, I've bought it. Oh, I've paid for it. I paid for it in June. Technically, you actually have to have – it has to be available for use is the term they use. So you've got to take possession of it and actually have it to be able to use. So, it's got to be installed, got to be ready for use, got to be delivered. You've got to have the thing to actually claim the deduction. It's not bad. I mean, you still get to claim a deduction. It's just over the life of the asset.
It's the golden rule of cash flow, though, isn't it? Is if you're spending your money, you want to get it back in as quickly as you can. And so if you can get that deduction, get the cash back in, do that.
Absolutely right. You know, if you're getting a tax deduction, the money's in your account, you can use it to do other things, to grow your business, to expand your business, to do what you need to do. So absolutely agree. So that's a big thing that's changing as at 30 June. Who knows? The budget could come out in a couple of weeks and it'll all change again. But at the moment, start looking at those, because this is definitely not being tipped anywhere to be extended.
And speaking of the budget for a moment, because I know as an accountant, you're probably that's kind of like
glass of red wine is ready. Yeah,
only one really. any thoughts? I guess we can't crystal ball too much about what might come up in the government, but usually they kind of give some hints and some direction about where things are going. Any thoughts?
No, there's a few things out there. I try not to get too caught up in it. Within the week leading up to it, that's when the real good oil starts coming out, I guess, when you start learning a bit more about it. I try not to get too caught up in the preliminary stuff, because a lot of it is a bit of speculation and watering down and trying to get you in a certain mind frame, and then a frame of mind, I should say. And then by the time it actually drops, it's different to what was said anyway, and it just confuses the issue.
Right.
Like at the moment, they've got this, this hasn't actually come out anywhere that it's going to be changed, but I hope it will. And I think logic will prevail, that there's this $3 million on super funds. If you've got a balance more than $3 million, there's additional tax in there, which is going to get through. And I think what the ATO have done, which governments are doing lately, they're coming out with this really big bad story that's pretty bad, because they're talking about anything over $3 million. They want to tax the unrealized capital gains within the fund, so growth in value that you haven't actually sold an asset, and they want to start taxing that when it's over for the amount over $3 million, which is kind of no one ever gets taxed on an unrealized capital gain, but they're talking about it. And I suspect this is purely off the cuff, but purely speculation from me.
Yeah.
I suspect they brought it out like that. By the time it gets to budget, we'll get rid of that and just do it unrealized. And everyone will feel they've had a win, because they're prepping for the really bad news. And at least they've given us back a bit on that. But who knows? Who knows? Let's see what they come up with.
Yeah. Whoever thought that the government would be involved in such nefarious marketing activities, hey? That's a marketing strategy if ever there was.
It certainly is. Exactly right. So, there's enough people in the government to come up with these ideas, I think.
Cool. All right. Well, back to tax planning, mate. And what else is hot this year?
For dental practices. Professional profits allocation. That's a word no one wants to talk about. Yes. No one even knows what it is.
What's that mean? Okay, let's let me be the person to ask the dumb question. Can you give us that in layman's terms, please, mate?
You're a perfect plant in the audience for me, Jesse. You're asking those questions leading in.
Perfect.
So there's a practical compliance guideline has been issued by the tax office. Now, it's not law. It's kind of like just, it's not a ruling. It's just them saying, this is how we're going to administer things going forward. If you run a practice, let's step back. If you are a contracting doctor or dentist, you have personal services income and you pay tax on that personal services income. Once you run a practice and you're generating income from yourself and other dentists, hygienists, DAs, you're generating other income, it becomes business profits, which is great. So as long as you take a reasonable portion of that for your work that you do in it, any profit generated by them and the equipment and the structure and the business, we can have a bit of flexibility where it goes. And most people have a trust under there somewhere. They're distributing out to spouse, maybe some kids, maybe a bucket company. They're trying to average out their bit of their income, which is fine. And that's been happening because it's business income, not an issue at all. However, this PCG 2021/4 has come out, and it's basically the ATO saying, hey, if you do that, we get you do that, and that's fine, but we're going to put in some guidelines as to when we want to audit you to see whether that is appropriate, the amount that you're paying, and make sure you're paying enough within your entity. It's quite a complicated framework they've given. It ends up with a traffic light system of, if you're less than 7, you're green. If you're, 8 to 9, you're amber, and above 9, you're red, and things like that.
Yep.
But they have these guidelines, and it's all based on, of the profit generated, what percentage of that is distributed to the principal practitioner?
Yeah.
What average rate of tax is the group paying, and how is that money around? So there's a bit of work around that. That has come in from 1 July 2022. if you've been complying with previous guidelines, which most people have from December 17 or somewhere, whenever it was, when they sort of came out with these bit of a guideline of how much tax you should be paying. And it used to be the rough guide was if you're paying 30% average rate of tax, all good, we're sweet,
yep,
everybody wins. I should mention this is general advice because there is quite a bit of detail in this. All this is general, specific, ring your accountant, ring me, ring someone, but don't just go, oh, I heard that on the podcast, I'm good.
Yeah.
This is, I'm paraphrasing an awful lot of stuff here, but roughly 30% tax, all good. Now that they're sort of, it's pushing out to more being a 35% is my gut feel of how it works. So they have these guidelines about who pays how much tax and where the profit goes. And they're basically saying, if you fit into these categories, if you're green, you're all good. If you're amber, we might look at it, but you're okay. If you're red, we'll be prioritizing looking at you and taking it through the ringer to find out where we can get more tax out of it. But as I said, it came in from 1 July 2022. But if you met the previous rules, that 30%-ish sort of stuff, and you're, there's more to it than that, but if you met that, it's not till 2024. So you have sort of got another year, but you've really got to be on top of it looking at it now to understand where you fit and what your exposure will be. And if you weren't meeting the previous guidelines, then technically it applies this year. So reach out to your accountant. You need to understand, tell them, professional profits allocation, tell them PCG 2021/4, that'll freak them out. I wonder who you've been talking to. But it's a big thing that you need to be aware of, and probably planning a bit for tax just to make sure you're sitting in the right spot and you've got the right traffic light for the tax office to not want to audit you and have a look at everything.
Does this come into structures and making sure you're set up correctly as well? Does this impact the structures with which you're operating and how you're distributing your profits to bucket companies? And
it really involves that. I mean, if you're a company that's owned that just has dividends that you're paying down, well, there's probably not so much in that. But if you've got a trust, which most people have, and you're distributing out to family members and you're flowing money, say, from a company to a trust and then out to family members, absolutely, that's what they're looking at. If there's a trust involved, they're probably, this is because they're such great structures, this is somewhere they're looking, because you're probably streaming out some income to other people in some way, and they're just saying, hey, we get it, that's all good, but we kind of want a bit more of the pie, please.
Yeah. Okay.
That's my take on it.
All right, cool. Okay, well, that'll be interesting to see how that unfolds. And so, ladies and gents, again, just to reiterate, everything we talk about on this podcast is general conversation. Please, please, please go and talk to your advisor, your accountant, whoever it is that's guiding you in that area, and please just don't do anything silly. Go and get the right advice.
And use those keywords to trigger it.
Yeah. Can you imagine if you go to, what was the phrase, PCG?
PCG 2021/4. Does that apply to my practice?
I reckon if an accountant has a client come and say, they're going to go, either who have you been speaking to, or they're going to have a massive crush and go, oh my God, you're speaking my love language all of a sudden.
It's weird. I've probably got 5-10% of clients who, really love tax, and you just think, wow. And often they're business owners as well. So you get right in tax. I had wasn't a dentist, it was a specialist doctor. He was a dermatologist, and he quoted me the Tax Act one day, and I'm like, what? How are you reading this?
just in my spare time, Brendan, just for a bit of R&R, I was down the beach.
I was a little impressed, I'll admit.
That's amazing. All right, mate. And then there's another big one coming up, isn't there? There's another hot topic.
There is. And it's not really, look, there's lots of other stuff you do regularly in tax planning, but from a tax point of view, there's income tax. That's important. That's what we've been talking about. That's what most people talk about when they talk about taxes. But there is this other nasty bugbear out there that practice owners need to start thinking about and be on top of. It's a state-based tax. It's called payroll tax. It's, in my opinion, the worst tax in the world. Mm. You are taxed for employing people, and that is ridiculous.
It's the dumbest tax ever.
It is. It's administered differently across every state, but kind of the same across every state. They're pretty aligned on the way it works. It's been big in GP land for doctors for two years, let's be honest. It's been pretty big for 2 years.
Yep.
It is coming into dental. It's already effectively here, but it's coming. It won't be far off. Quick highlight of it, I guess there was a couple of cases. Optical Superstore in Victoria, Thomas Nars in New South Wales. No real highlight ones yet in Queensland, but then Queensland came out with a private ruling basically to say, well, hey, we're getting on this too. This is what we think. And what it's really doing is saying, well, under normal arrangement, you have SFA or whatever with a dentist who's a contracting dentist to you. They might be, you know, I don't know, 35 less labs or something, whatever arrangement they're on, whatever structure they have, however it works. They bill the patients effectively, mm-hmm. and then you charge them a management fee or a service fee, I should say. That service fee covers the staff that are provided, the rooms, the equipment, all the machinery, all that sort of stuff. Pretty standard arrangement, been in place for many, many years. And that's all been absolutely fine. However, these cases, this private ruling, all of this is now saying, well, and keep in mind this, it's kind of just interpretation of the way things change. And now these cases are rolling out as well. But what they're saying is, well, that used to be fine and that wasn't subject to payroll tax. But now we think it is. And the key is there's a payment that goes from the practice. So the practice holds the money. The dentist does the billing, the practice administers it all as part of that arrangement, that the split of money. It says, well, we'll collect the money for you, organize it all, and then distribute it to you, and that's your money. But there's a distribution of that, let's say 35% to keep it simple. There's a distribution of that 35% that goes to the dentist. And what they're saying is that is a payment for service from the practice to the dentist. From an income tax point of view, from a superannuation point of view, there's no issue there. Everyone's on the same page there. Well, no, it's not. They're just collecting it as agent on behalf of the income of the billing is actually the dentist's, and there's a service fee that we're charging them, and there's GST on that service fee. So GST, income tax, federal point of view, that's all good. It's no problem. We understand that's a commercial arrangement in place. Mm. From a state point of view, what they consider wages is completely, not completely different, but it's definitely not the same. It's different to the federal interpretation of it. So they're saying, well, if you pay wages to people of $1 million and then you also make payment to dentists of another $1 million, rather than you not being subject to payroll tax because you're under a threshold, now all of a sudden, well, actually the whole lot's concluded and both of those millions are now included as considered wages and you will pay payroll tax onto that. And payroll tax, depending on the state, Queensland's a bit easier, it eases you into it. New South Wales a bit quicker in getting into it. But let's say it's up to 5% of wages. You know, 5% of the amount that you're, and what they consider wages, 5% of the amount you're paying out to dentists plus the amount you pay to staff plus super, you know, 5% of $2 million, that's getting up there. There's a fair bit of coin you're paying there. And it's it's just something, if you're running a practice in a skinny sort of margins, you're not a software company making, 50% net profit out of this. You're running at a 15% profit or something like that. Well, yeah, losing 5% of wages, which is probably in reality, let's call it 3% of the billings.
Yep.
Yeah, that's a fair clip. If you're going 15% profit down to 12% profit, that's not insignificant. That's a fair amount. So this is coming. It's absolutely coming. It's almost Queensland, not Queensland's fault, but these rulings were all in the doctors had to deal with this, the medical doctors, the GP sort of space. And then this ruling that Queensland just dropped on the 22nd of December, I might add. Great time.
Thanks, Christmas. Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
They were hoping that would get lost in Christmas, weren't they?
Just slip that one in and no one will deal with it till January is what they planned.
Yeah.
They went, if you're a GP or, brackets, allied, dental, just started listing everyone else, it's like, oh, great. So they're all just highlighted now, brought into it. And then they brought out an amnesty in Queensland, which has got even more confusing. They did what I said might happen in the budget, to be honest. They did the whole, this all applies. A month later, they've come out and went, oh, look, we get it. That's probably a harsh ruling. We'll give you an amnesty period. It'll only apply later on now. It'll apply in a couple of years' time, not right away. And everyone goes, oh, that's great. It's not as bad. They softened the blow a bit. But when they brought out the amnesty, they called it an amnesty for GPs. They didn't actually mention dental. So it's a bit of a weird, hey, dental, you're in it. And then here's an amnesty for GPs. Hold on a minute. What about the dentists?
So are they applying that rule retrospectively at all, or are they?
Yeah, if they apply it, even though this is a new interpretation of existing, if they apply it and they come to your practice and they ping you for payroll tax, they can go back 5 years and ping you those years as well. It can be massive.
So that's, well, if you go back to, interestingly, that 15% drop down to 12.
Yeah.
That's a 20% impact there. do that for 5 years, that's 100%, that's 1 year's worth of net profit that potentially you could be pinged, right?
Yeah, it's probably going to end up being more than that, to be honest. But yeah, that's exactly right. It's a huge, I mean, that's a big cut to your business model. That's a massive change.
It's a massive change.
The fact that they've sort of come out and reinterpreted their decision, or, you know, come out and said, this is how we'll now treat it, but it'll be retrospective as well. And if we audit you, we're going back 5 years. Like, New South Wales, absolutely. If you're in New South Wales and Victoria, but they are doing that right now. They will come in and audit. There's no amnesty there. They're coming in, they're auditing and going, hey, look, on the Thomas Nahr's decision, yep, we think this is subject to payroll tax. Oh, you've been doing this all the time, have you? We'll go back 5 years, thanks. We'll have all of that. But honestly, it's leaving options for practices. What do we do? Do we, you know?
It does beg the question about whether or not, because with the SFA and the contracting arrangements, whether you then go, okay, stuff it, I'm just going to make everyone an employee. Because what's the value in having an SFA after that, or a contracting arrangement?
Yeah, so that's one option. Make an employee, and as part of that, the percentage split they get, you've got to factor in payroll tax. That could become part of it. Then it's super, then it's annual leave, then it's everything else as well.
And it's hard
to administer.
There's
a lot more involved.
It's a bit hard.
The other way to deal with this, essentially, is their issue is more the payment that happens from the practice to the dentist. So if there is no payment from the practice to the dentist, 99% confident here that there is no real payroll tax issue on that, because there is no payment that's occurred. So that will essentially get rid of that. But it comes with its own administrative nightmares. Imagine running a practice, having little machines out the front to take payment, and each one or one machine with a different number has got to send the money to that dentist's account. Then you've got to be confident that your
dentist is going to send it back to you.
I reckon there is a fear of that, but I think in the doctor world, GP world, people got over that. I think that's okay. I think if you can't trust your dentist to give you the money back,
it's more the time. I don't think it's the fact.
Timing
it's the timing
issue.
Of it, because the practice is still bearing the cost of the staff, the this, the that, the other, right? So it's the cash flow impact.
Yeah, and that's for 1 month, and then it should be fine. So I agree that's an issue, but I think we can get over that hurdle eventually. Yeah. I think that part's okay. The biggest issue I see is the payments go to that dentist. Admin and reception occasionally make an error, and they pay it to the wrong dentist.
Oh, yeah.
How do you know if it's gone to the wrong dentist? How do you reconcile the practice management records to go back to look at those billings and to look at payments from health funds, and where's the money going and who's paying? Well, how do you reconcile all that when everyone's getting their own bank account? Do you give the practice manager read-only access to 7 dentists' bank accounts, and they've got to then individually reconcile each one? If there's an issue, bring, hey, Dr. Green, sorry, yeah, that $300 went in York. Can you transfer that back? It just starts becoming...
It's a mess.
There's a benefit to having it in one account where you can administer it and reconcile it and keep it simple.
Could you have like a joint account where the associate dentist and the practice kind of share that account?
No, not if it's in some way connected to the practice.
Nah,
you
okay.
could have, if the seven, I'm picking seven now, the seven dentists who are contracting dentists had their own bank account that those seven had individually.
Yes.
Yes, that would work.
Just the practice.
But who's going
to... Yeah, I know. I get it.
I mean, I'm not doing a sales pitch, but we're sort of doing a little collection service that we're trying to work out on that to do on the side, where we're basically engaging with the dentists to collect the money, but it's... Yeah. Not doing that. But it's... it's absolutely a disaster.
Yeah.
I think there'll be... There will be technological solutions that catch up to make this work.
Yeah.
They're just not here yet. And when this ruling and interpretation, well, it is a ruling in Queensland and the cases in Victoria and New South Wales, it's all retrospective, and the technology hasn't had time to catch up to be able to manage this. It feels really unfair, and it is unfair. So I think in time, practices will work out ways to do it. The big guys are all stuck with this as well, so it's going to be affecting everyone. There will be solutions, there will be options, but I've been saying this for 2 years in GP space and we haven't quite got the solution yet.
Mm.
It's really a bit of this could be a hairy couple of years while we get this sorted.
So what are the GPs saying to you, mate? How have they, you know, what's their experience been at the coalface? Because I know you deal with them a lot. What's been their lessons?
The learnings from GP space into dental world are really along the lines of make sure your contracts are pretty tight and pretty well written, and that they can't be restrictive. It can't be, you know, the patients really have to be the patients of the dentist. So it can't be you're only allowed 4 weeks off every year. you can't do this with our patients, you can't do that with our patients. When you leave, they're all our patients. You kind of can't have those restrictions in there, which you probably want, to be honest. You can't have those in there. Also on your websites, don't have things like, and I talked to a couple of people at your conference about this, and who said, oh, no, we're good. And I quickly jumped on their website and brought it up and look, and it says, you know, our dentists. It's like, are they your dentists? Aren't these contracting independent dentists that are using your facilities? Mm. So the bit of where it's going to end up going, in my opinion, is you will either have pretty loose contracts with dentists that have not much restriction and not much ability for the practice to really operate as best it can.
Mm.
You'll have to have websites up to date, so links to the dentist, to their own little websites, maybe their own little profiles, so patients can find them when they need to. And then they probably collect their own billings, which is an administrative nightmare.
Pay
the payroll tax.
Yeah.
I mean, the option that could come out of this, to be honest, for some small practices in particular, because it's going to affect them more. If you're just under the threshold, you may be just in it, you're paying a bit of payroll tax, but you might go, you know what, I've got three dentists. I do want better restrictions on those dentists. I want to make them a bit more like an employee where I can control that a bit more.
Mm.
And I don't want to have to spend much more administrative time trying to look at different bank accounts. We're going to employ someone for 40 grand a year to do that.
Maybe I'll just wear it.
No, I just pay the payroll tax. So we do a lot of talking about, oh, I don't want to pay it. And then sometimes you got to dial back and go, in your situation,
pay the money.
Maybe I have tighter contracts. Maybe I have more restraint. Maybe I can keep better control and grow this practice the way I want to. And this is a cost of doing business. I hate it and I just got to pay it. And as I said, it's the worst tax in the world. Why tax people for employing people?
100%. And I think the thing that comes with that as well, mate, is, you know, what I'd be saying is what are the cost recovery procedures we can implement to make sure that this becomes cost neutral for us? Yeah. So how do we manage our fee structures? How do we do all those other things to offset that? And go, once I can calculate what my liability is going to be, I'm going, okay, well, how do I make that money and more?
Yep.
To make it a non-issue. So,
and in the GP space, interesting you say that. If you that's sort of what's happening. It's, and to be honest, it's maybe not all of it is directly related to payroll tax, but a good chunk of this is. That is frightening practices, and there are a lot of practices, GP practices, moving from bulk billing to mixed billing.
Yep.
It is killing the bulk billing industry in GP world. That's sort of an effect. So you're right. As a practice, you've either got to pass it on to the patient or the contracting dentist has to wear a part of it.
Yep.
And over time, every practice will start doing it. The dentist will start being part of that potentially, and they'll get that, geez, you guys are under the pump. I get it. I hear a lot about this in the news. This payroll tax is killing you guys. I see I can't get more than that as a percentage. Oh, okay, I get it. But at the moment, they don't get that because everyone's trying to get dentists and they're willing to pay, and that just the practice has to suffer, or it has to charge patients, and yeah, it's not a great story, but it's what you need to do is manage it and be aware of it. I'm a big believer in, you know, when you don't know what's happening, it's a lot more fearful. When you know and you have a known event, okay, it's this or this.
Yeah, we manage.
You sleep better at night.
100%. I think that's the thing is what's that expression? You can't control what happens. You can only control how you respond to it. And so we can't control what rules are going to be implemented or how they're going to be interpreted or how they're going to be applied. But talking to your advisors, go back and talk to your advisors, your accountants, and position yourself to be ready for this. And also from where I sit, I'd also be thinking, okay, now I have to start growing. And to your point about the thin margins in Medicare bulk billed practices in general practice, for us as dentists, we've got to protect those margins. We've got to make sure that we are operating a really sound and profitable business so we're not operating on wafer-thin margins. So, ladies and gents, please, please, please protect your margins, put your fees up, do all those things you need to do if that's your strategy to cope with this.
Absolutely. And whether that be then, yeah, well, talk to Jesse. You do what you need to do to grow your business and make it bigger. It's exactly what you need to do because you just can't wear these sort of costs that are getting thrown at us. And unfortunately, it's a bit of a stinger when it's the government throwing these costs at us. It's not so much a change or a disruptor in the industry. It's not as though the Ubers have come into the taxi industry. This is a government-funded one.
Like,
it's,
yeah, no.
Oh, it's killing me.
Yeah, I know. And it's really interesting, isn't it? Because, you know, at the end of the day, I was reading a stat the other day, Brendan. This is, again, I'm probably going to sound like the guy that reads the tax code for you for a second. But I was reading the Australian Bureau of Statistics website the other day because...
Of course you were.
I know. There's a little over 2.5 million businesses in Australia. And of those, about 97 or 98% are considered small businesses. So these rules are going to impact small to medium enterprise businesses significantly. The larger businesses are probably already paying payroll tax, presumably, because they probably already crossed that threshold into the payroll tax world anyway.
They will be, but they won't be paying it on their dentists yet a lot of the time. But you're right.
I'm just talking big business in general. So, you know, the Coles, the Woolies, the West Farmers, yeah. all that mob, right? But it's the small to medium-sized businesses. And an interesting stat is that 98% of the businesses are small businesses, and of those small businesses, about 90 of them employ 15 to 20 people or less.
Mm.
Again, what that's really going to sharpen up things is if we are having some economic hiccups along the way, who knows, that may impact on what people do for an employment level too. I mean, I don't know. I'm not crystal balling, but you would think that the knock-on consequences aren't always thought through with these decisions is the point I'm trying to make.
I do agree. It's much harder for a small business to get a dentist than it is for a bigger business a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And they're the ones that are really going to be struggling with this. Maybe in a weird way, the really small practices could actually benefit because they might stay under the threshold.
Maybe
this is the government foresight. Maybe that's what they're trying to do. I'm pretty confident it's not. But
Anyway.
It's a killer. So payroll tax, yeah. When you're asking about PCG 2021/4, you can ask them about payroll tax as well.
And what that means. Well,
I also want to buy an EV, please.
Your account is going to light up like a Christmas tree. Oh, my God.
Yeah, they'll love it.
That's fantastic. Hey, mate, you've been really generous to share these really important strategies and tactics to be prepared for the end of the financial year. One of the things I'd just like to ask as we wrap up this session is if you had the opportunity to whisper into the ears of practice owners and go, hey, I just think, you know, apart from the tax planning, there's a couple little things that, you know, we see in our world that we think you need to be aware of. If there are any other little thoughts or strategies, just broadly, not necessarily about tax, but anything else.
Yep, yep.
Where do you see, or where do you think, you know, practice owners just need to keep their mind alert and focused on?
I like it. Good question. A big thing for me with my clients, with practice owners, with any business, this is just any business in general. I think it's really, really important that you build a business, and from that business, you need to extract value. You need to get profit out of it. You need to get value out of it. Mm. If you build a business and you work hard at that for 20 or 30 years and you build this big business and your retirement strategy is, I will sell that and make a mozza to someone else, a corporate, whatever, you're on the wrong strategy. You've got to be building a business. You've got to be building wealth outside of that business. It's not connected to that business, de-risking yourself from that business. If something goes wrong in that business, unforeseen circumstance, when you get to the end of that business, you should have wealth built outside of that business, because that's what's paying, you know, at the end of the day, why do people want to be in business? They want to make good money. If you go down to a more granular level, they want to keep their spouse happy. They want to put their kids in private school, and they want to live a comfortable life as good as the next person. That's all they really want, and you need money to do that, and a business is a way to do that. So if you're not extracting that value, building that wealth outside, you've really got to generate that so you've got a comfortable life. When you sell this business, I always say it should be the icing on the cake, not the cake.
Yeah.
So that's, you've got to build it outside. I talk to clients who say, oh, you know, I'll talk about super, you know, what are you putting into super this year? Because it's not mandated for people to run business. You don't have to put in money if you're not paying yourself a wage, whatever. But, you know, how much are you putting in this year? This is the max you can go up to. Here's how it works. Oh, I'm not going to do super this year because. There is always a because. You could say that for the next 20 years. But if you don't do it, then it's not going to be there in 20 years. So you have to start. You have to put money aside. Whether it be super, whether it be through an investment trust, whether it be in your own name. I'm rabbiting on a bit here. Sorry.
No, it's good.
But I get a bit excited about these things.
Me too, mate, because at the end of the day, when it comes to retirement, in inverted commas, you don't want to have to rely on that sale because that's uncertain.
Absolutely. And wouldn't it be great if you don't have to? Like if you can do the right things and get the money out and build, and then when you sell it, it's like, oh, yeah, I'll sell that. Yeah, that'd be good. Throw it in the pile. Fantastic.
Happy days.
Anyway, that's something I'm passionate about, talk about tax. That's one way of reducing taxes. We talk about growth. We talk about strategies, all that sort of stuff. But at the end of the day, big picture, most people, core fundamentals, they want money to be as good as the person next to them, put their kids through a private school probably, keep their wife happy, keep their family happy and provide. That's it. And be happy in life. There's no point just working as well. Got to be happy in life.
100%.
Anyway,
No. I love it. That's my soapbox spiel as well. I love it. And that's something that we are very much aligned with. And certainly in the work that we do, we're always saying you got to build your business, got to take the money off the table and do something sensible with it. So again, I'd encourage you to go and talk to your advisors about what that strategy might look like. Get the right structures in place, get the right plan in place and start building that wealth. So again, mate, really, really key point. Brendan, as always, mate, it's been a thrill and a pleasure to catch up. I love talking to you because I always come away from these conversations stimulated and thinking, and the cogs in my brain start whirring into action. And I'm sure in a day or two, I'll be ringing you going, hey, mate, about that PCG 2021.
Yeah, yeah.
And you'll be going, yeah.
And I've got this EV.
Exactly. Oh, dear, dear. Mate, no, appreciate it. As always, I really get a lot out of these conversations, and I know the audience does too, mate, so thank you. Really, really helpful stuff.
Not a problem. Thanks for having me on.
All right, mate, we'll catch up soon.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast. For more episodes, go to drjessegreen.com/savvydentist. And to discover how to build a high-performance dental practice, visit drjessegreen.com and download the free report.